Hello, mate. I hope you're absolutely fantastic. Welcome back to Did You Earn It or Did You Learn It? The podcast that allows you to enjoy and celebrate the hiccups in life to make the process a lot more fun. Mate, today I have got my best mate here, someone that I've been looking forward to having on this podcast for a long, long time, someone that I know that you're definitely going to fall in love with. And I hope that by the end of this episode, that is someone that you want to bring into your life. Jen Rolich, how are you, mate? Thank you for being here. I appreciate you. How's things going?
I'm good. I'm all the better for seeing you. I'm delighted to be here. Can you believe that we've been best mates for a whole year now?
It
Time flies when you're having fun.
feels like forever.
It
Feels like
has been really.
I think that's good context. Like, it has only been a year, but the relationship I have with this lady is absolutely fantastic. Like, her energy, the way that she does stuff, the way that I've never met someone that can teach a foreign language. I now know Scottish.
You're fucking fluent. It's great.
It's brilliant. But no, she's absolutely brilliant. And who she is brilliant. But the skill and the time, money, and energy that she's invested into herself is absolutely brilliant. I would love it, mate, if you could give the person listening an insight to who you are. What makes you tick and what brings you joy?
Oh wow, what an intro. So that's me. I'm Jen Rolich. I am a brain-based behaviour change coach. So I work in and around the health and fitness industry, supporting people through the mental and emotional side of change. But what takes up most of my time these days is as a coach, educator, and supervisor. So I teach health and fitness coaches how to help their clients get guaranteed transformational results and how to support them through the challenges and the successes that arise through that process, so that their coaching process is not a stab in the dark, but actually a specific thing that can guarantee outcomes in an ethical and successful way. Because I've spent a lot of time and a lot of money with fucking cowboy PTs in my life, and I think it's shite that coaches in the industry call themselves coaches, but nobody's ever taught them how to coach. So that's where I come in with my business partner Mark and Built a Coach. And that's what takes up most of my time. What makes me tick? I mean, on that subject, probably unethical coaching and unethical practice in the industry. I'm absolutely sick to death of unqualified people pretending to have qualifications that they cut out a cereal box and then deciding that that's them, they're able to help heal people. The challenge of working in an unregulated industry or an industry where unregulated practice is not only accepted but celebrated is that a lot of people will tell you don't need qualifications to do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, actually, you do, because before we had qualifications to do things, people were like amputating folks' legs and they were dying of sepsis. So actually, we do need qualifications for lots of things for very good reason. Because coaching is more than just talking to people about their feelings. And yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that makes me tick in my day job is seeing people who have built businesses on the basis of like vibes and enjoying what they do and just thinking that, like, because I'm good at this, I can just keep doing it without considering actually how do I keep that person safe? Am I qualified to know when we're crossing an ethical boundary? Am I qualified to know when that person is becoming unsafe? Have we been trained to spot the signs of someone who is holding back or maybe has something deeper going on? Or we're veering into territory that I'm not able to help them with? And promising people something and taking people's money for something that they can't deliver. That's probably my biggest challenge, and actually, probably the biggest driving force behind Built to Coach is to bring ethical and professional coaching practice to an industry where that's not something that's really prioritised for a lot of people. What brings me joy? Oh, hundreds of things bring me joy. I would say I'm quite a joyful person. I force myself to see the good in all things in life as somebody who was previously a very negative person and only seen the bad. What brings me joy? See, this is a challenging one because I'm really boring. And so the things that bring me joy are probably really boring things. Food brings me joy. Food used to be like a really like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like not a joy, whatever the opposite of a joy is. Food used to fucking shackle me and rule my life. But now that I've overcome an eating disorder, I feel like food brings me a lot of joy. I love to cook. I love the process of deciding what I'm going to cook, buying all the ingredients, shutting the kitchen door, putting on a bit of Joni Mitchell, pouring myself a glass of red wine, and braising some fucking short ribs. Nothing lights my fire more than that. All the things that bring me joy are things most of the time that I do on my own, because I do a job where I'm talking to people all day, every day. So most of my fun is in solitude. Exercise brings me joy, which pains me to say because I'm the kind of person who for a lot of years thought that people that said that were fucking arseholes. And listen, sometimes they are, right? Sometimes they are. However, at the ripe old age of 31, I could truly say I'm the kind of person where exercise brings me joy. Running is my pain of choice. It's absolutely grim and brutal the vast majority of the time, and I don't know why I find it joyful, in all honesty. But that does. My garden, love gardening. Again, notice the theme here. Boring. Love gardening. I love couch rotting. Couch rotting is probably one of my favourite activities. For anybody who doesn't know what couch rotting is, it is literally lying on your couch, rotting, watching telly, watching films. Love doing that. Yeah. There's probably loads of things. I get a huge chunk of joy from my job. And that's not me saying that because I feel like I have to say that. That's genuine. I love nothing more than sitting on a call with someone and having a conversation and seeing the cogs in their brain turn to realize something different that they hadn't considered before that changes like the course of action that they take, and being able to give somebody another brain to think on their challenge and their problem that's only been existing on their own. That truly brings me so much joy. So I feel incredibly lucky for this to be my job, big time.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate you. Can you remember the first time you actually experienced the someone else kind of going through change? Was there this that like, oh my God moment, or was this something deep down that you knew could happen with the right guidance?
I think I don't remember a specific first time. I can remember standout moments, but I think the one of the biggest challenges for me when I first started coaching is I had zero confidence or self-belief. So even when people were making progress, I couldn't attach myself to it. And the funny thing about coaching is you should never really be attached to your clients' outcomes, like regardless, like for the highs or the lows. You should never be attached to their successes or their failures because those are the person's to own. They're not the coach's to own. We are part of it, but we don't hold the responsibility for it. So for a long time, I did struggle with almost like being able to celebrate the success and like the role that I played in it. And I would get wee pangs sometimes where I would be like, oh, I did that. But I did go through a long time where people would send me really lovely like texts and really nice feedback. And I just wouldn't feel anything because I would just convince myself that like that was all them, like I didn't do that well enough, or they were already going to be successful anyway. So I've not really helped. Like it's just been a matter of coincidence that they've managed to get here after that. Or like I've had people say to me that they've worked with other people in the past, but then they came to work with me and it's a whole different experience. And I really struggled to attach my own, like, what's the word? Like my own skills, my own expertise to that. However, I think over the years, I've kind of realized that like I've been doing this for almost, well, about 3 years now, and I've kind of realized like I wouldn't have been able to sustain this for 3 years if I was shit at it. Do you know what I mean? So see, when I look at it in terms of like probability, I'm like, well, if I was shite at it, it probably wouldn't have lasted the 3 years that it has and grown to the place that it has. So I think over the years, the more I can coach instinctively and confidently, the more I notice those moments. And there's a really interesting brain-based coaching theory called the Four Faces of Insight. And there was loads and loads of research that they did when they created this series, where they looked at I can't remember the specifics, but they basically did research around the different faces that people make as the composition of their brains change when they're reaching an insight. So an insight is just learning a new piece of information about yourself or a situation that changes how you think about it. And the third face of the four faces is illumination, like insight. So that's the point at which you have that light bulb moment, like the thing switches and you're like, shit, that's it, that's the thing that I've been looking for. And you can watch that happen in people's faces. And I think now that I have one, an awareness of that, and two, I can recognize my role in achieving that. That's my bread and butter. That's the shit that I live for. As soon as somebody says to me, I've never thought about it like that before, I'm like, right, okay, we're cooking with gas. So I love that. I don't think I'll ever get bored of that.
I just so you could hear this, because this is going to be recorded, so I can do this too. You are magnificent. And I remember the first time that we had a couple of conversation around this sort of stuff, I had like a serious crisis and I had to go and lie in a dark room. And I know we joke about this all the time, and you say this all the time, but this is obviously what the point of this podcast is, right? Is to help upskill people and help people maybe find something or something that they're missing. And this was definitely something that I was missing. And there's a few bits and pieces that you helped me with straight away as soon as we started speaking around separating yourself from the client result. If someone is kind of in that position where they're so almost like tied into like the positives, or I'm air quoting here, but the negatives of what's happening in terms of a client's journey. Is there something sort of tactical and kind of tangible you would advise someone with to kind of create that separation?
Yeah, there's. I mean, we could probably spend like 3 days talking about this alone. Something I see missing for a lot of health and fitness coaches specifically. I can only really speak in that context because that's the industry that I work in. But I see this happen for health and fitness coaches quite a lot, where they don't establish good working boundaries in the first place. Therefore, they don't learn how to establish emotional boundaries with their clients and their client relationships. So, because most of the coaches that I work with will be online or hybrid, there's this perception of because you can work from anywhere at any time, then you should work from anywhere at any time. And then this reinforces a cultural belief that everybody else is working everywhere all the time, and that the people who are more successful than you are only more successful because they're working longer and harder, which really isn't the case. And I think something that gets missed quite a lot, in this industry particularly, is that nobody takes into consideration other people's means and access to being able to get to those positions. So, like, if you're a single parent with two kids, your means and access to grow a business are really, really different from a 21-year-old guy who lives with his parents and has all the time in the world, right? Your means and access, although the process is the same, your means and access to be able to do it, like, is totally different. And like, when we think about, I always think about this like in a societal context. Like, if I go to a public school and somebody else goes to a private school, it's naturally expected that they will have better means, access, and opportunity than me, and that's like an accepted fact of life. Whereas when we look at the industry, nobody ever takes into consideration other people's means, access, being in the right room at the right time, and your name being spoken by the right person, like, carries so much weight in this industry and in probably so many others, that people taking the right opportunities at the right time has had a huge factor in their success. And luck is a huge part of it as well. So I think that that's something that is a huge determining factor in people's ability to be able to build the kind of business that they want and the kind of business that they determine successful, which culturally is not discussed because everybody needs to feel like they have earned it. And I think you're the deciding factor in whether you've earned it or not. Like, you decide whether you've earned the right and you've earned the opportunity. Nobody else gets to decide that for you. And if you can earn it working in a way that suits your life and what makes you happy and your definition of success, instead of doing it the way that everybody else tells you and fucking hating it. Like, I know what one I would rather have, right? So I think that's a huge determining factor, is boundaries in general. and recognizing that it's your job, right? It's not all of you, it's not all of who you are. When you're in a more stable and emotionally regulated place, that will positively influence your coaching practice. So, as an accredited coach with my registration body, if I'm not in a fit mental state to practice and I practice and I do harm, then I can be struck off the register and not allowed to coach anymore. Whereas in the health and fitness industry, if you're surviving in fucking nothing but monsters and air and nae sleep, nobody comes in and says to you, you're unsafe to practice, right? So you have to be your own determining factor in what's okay and what's acceptable and what's ethical and what boundaries are, because nobody teaches that to you, right? Except in Built to Coach, which is why we created it. So that's a huge determining factor for people when it comes to the interactions that they have with their clients. And then what you bring to the coaching dynamic as a result of all of that will have a huge, huge influence on how successful your clients are. So we're only responsible for 50% of the relationship, but we have to make sure that that 50% has 100% of our effort and our time and our energy and everything that we can possibly bring to make that 50% a solid 50%. When you're confident that you are bringing everything you possibly can to the dynamic, that you're aware of all your own shit and all your own emotional baggage and all your biases and all your judgments, and you can see how that influences the dynamic, and you're able to put yourself in a place of coaching from objectivity, right? Which is not seeing it through the lens that which you understand it, right? But seeing what are the all the other lenses that you and I could look at this same challenge with, you start to view yourself and the client starts to view you as a thinking partner. So instead of you coming to me with a problem and I'm responsible for solving it or you don't get a result, we see it as how do both of these brains connect on this same issue, right? And use our different perspectives to find a third way of changing this that neither of us have considered before. When you see yourself as a thinking partner and the support to the coaching relationship, like I describe coaching as the client's in the driver's seat, you're in the passenger seat. The client ultimately decides where we're going, right? You've got Google Maps open. You make a recommendation. You give the recommended route. This is the fastest route to get there. But the client says, do you know what? I really want to go left up here because I don't want to go on the motorway. I'd rather go the back road. That's totally fine. You're in control. You're driving. I'm just holding the map open. I'm just giving directions and letting you know we can go the back roads, but it will take longer if you're okay with that. I'm fine with that. Okay, that's fine. If you want to go back on the motorway anytime, let me know. We'll take a diversion. So you're the navigator, but they're in control. They're the driver, and the responsibility for getting to the destination lies with the client and the client alone.
Should we go and help sit down together, everybody?
We
Thank
pause.
you. It's amazing. It's so powerful, and it's so important that that is said, right? Because people don't know. Because, as you say, and you spoke about earlier, sometimes people jump into things because of vibes, and that's amazing that you do that. But it's also important that we're doing it from a place of care and love, because ultimately, that person is. We speak about this all the time. Is the hardest thing for an adult to do is admit that they're struggling with something, and if we can't provide the thing that they need, it's not good. So I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm so glad that you provide the service and the support for people that they need, because it's something that everybody, in my opinion, should have to go through to actually be part of this industry. To swerve the car off the road, you are someone that I admire so much for the confidence that she has in herself. And I'm fully aware that it's not a blind confidence, but there is an underlying confidence. Where did she get that from? How much does it cost? Can I have a bottle of it? Is it something that you've always had, or is it something that you've worked upon?
Oh, I would never, and probably still wouldn't to this day, describe myself as a confident person. I have lacked in confidence for more of my life than I've had it. I would honestly only say that confidence in my professional practice, but who I am as a person, has really only come in the last few years, in all honesty. And being in therapy, spoiler alert, Jean, who was on the last podcast episode, is also my therapist. The fitness industry is a very incestuous place. You could fit us all in my living room. but working with Jean has been really transformational in building my self-belief and my confidence in myself. But I was, if you had met me when I was younger, I would be unrecognizable to you as a person. Like, I was just petrified of everyone and everything. Like, I was such a weird, weird kid. Like, I absolutely detested social situations. I wouldn't play with other kids. I wouldn't go, I refused to go to nursery. I refused to go to play group. I went to my childminder, and there was a couple other kids at childminder that I got on with, but they were like my safe people. Wouldn't play with the kids in the street. They would come to the door and ask me to go and play, and I wouldn't go. My mum said people used to phone the house and say, like, oh, is Jennifer coming out, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nope, thanks. I've got The Sims 2 and I'm sound, and I would literally play The Sims 2. I still play The Sims 2 to this day. So nothing has changed in the last 20 years. But I was always really shy. I was always really scared. That's the only way I can describe it. I just remember feeling scared all the time, scared of new situations, scared of making friends. I went to high school, I got bullied relentlessly, like really, really badly. High school up until about fourth year was just a fucking miserable experience for me. I was fat, so that's your immediate, you've immediately got a target in your back. I was also smart, which puts a big target in your back. I went to school in a working class area, so a lot of the kids that I was going to school with were coming from really fucking horrific home environments, to be honest with you. Like, the vast majority of them, somebody getting stabbed at my school at lunchtime is just like a non-event. So a lot of these kids were coming with fucking horrendous home situations, and I wasn't. So I think that kind of made me a target, and I was smart, so it's easy to bully somebody that's smart. so school was a bit horrible, but music was my whole life when I was younger. So before I went to study psychology, I almost went to, it used to be RSAND, it's the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland now. I almost went there to study to be a music teacher, because music was what I poured my whole life into. So I started playing flute when I was 10, and I started playing piano when I was 12. And music genuinely was my whole life. So, like, break times, lunch times, I've got the music department. And I would just practice, practice, practice. I would do music theory. Music theory is the most boring part of studying music, and I loved it. I loved it. I would practice scales. Scales, again, is the most boring part of any instrument. I would do scale after scale after scale. I would go home. I would go to an after-school thing. I was in every band, choir, orchestra, you name it. And then I would go home, and I would do more practice, and I would do more music theory. I was really good at school. I was good at the educational part. So I'd do my homework, and I'd do extra homework and all that. I was a sad bastard. So then, as I got a bit older, a lot of the other weird kids would gravitate towards the music department as well. So I found my people. And then that kind of became a huge part of my life. And as I got older at school, life started to become a bit easier. Started to make friends and stuff like that. Got a boyfriend and all that. All I wanted the whole time I was in high school was a boyfriend. Boys would they fucking look at me because I didn't speak. I remember having this pure obsession growing up, being like, oh my God, why? I'll never get a boyfriend. I'll never get a boyfriend. And as an adult, I'm like, boys probably would have spoke to me, but I was so fucking petrified of my own shadow when I make eye contact with anybody. So I would say as I grew older, I started to grow more confident. And then when I was 16, I met my ex. Unfortunately, I was in an abusive relationship for the following 6 years until I was 22. So that really destroyed any semblance of confidence that I had built up, to be honest. And I think to be exposed to that from such a young age, the abuse started around the age of 17 for me. So to be in those really formative, like, teenage, early adulthood years and be exposed to that, I think has a huge impact on your own sense of self and how you view yourself and how you view your self-worth. So I didn't actually learn how to have self-worth until like my late 20s, like early 30s, which is mad considering how much of my life I've kind of gone through with really no little to no existence of any sort of self-worth, because what little I had built was taken away from me by someone else. So a huge part of my 20s came from just trying to rebuild my life, and I threw myself into work. So I used to work as an organisational development consultant, which is a really long-winded way of saying whenever there was people and a problem, I was sent in to fix it. And I loved that job, but again, I had no belief in my own ability. People used to tell me all the time, "You're really good at this." I moved up the ladder quite quickly, so I get promoted like twice within 2 years. So I was in a leadership role at 26, which is relatively young. Like I think like if I was in my like 50s or 60s, and somebody who was my boss was 26, I'd probably be fucking pissed off, right? I'd be like, who the fuck's this wee clown telling me what to do? But I like to think I was quite good. I was very reasonable. But I managed to achieve that success quite quickly because I just threw myself into it, and that was all I wanted to do. And that was all I wanted to focus on, probably in the hope that it would give me some sort of confidence and self-worth, but I still didn't believe in myself, no matter what feedback I got, no matter what qualifications I'd done. No matter what I did, I used to speak to rooms of hundreds of people, like 300 people, about leadership, and still just nothing registering, because the reality is that until the belief comes from within, you don't see it as being true. So yeah, the person I am now is years and years of working fucking thousands and thousands of pounds in therapy and self-development. But I think it's less about what I've created and more about what I've accepted. So I don't think I've created confidence, or I don't think I've created self-belief. I think I've just accepted myself for who I am. And once I've accepted myself for who I am, I then only surround myself with others who accept me for who I am. And I don't feel the need to adjust that for other people, which is really, really freeing, I would say.
Mate, you're marvelous, and thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate you. When did you decide that that was what you needed? Did you know that that's what you needed, or is it a case of actually the situation that I was in, I don't want that anymore, and you kind of went down this journey and you decided that that's what you needed?
What do you mean by what I needed?
I love the way that you angled it, and the way that you said, actually, this is the way that it works for me, in terms of your ability to accept yourself and accept the way that you view things. That really resonate with me, because that's probably something that I've struggled to do for a lot of my life, right? Is accept it. So did that come off the back of you experiencing stuff and going, actually, do you know what? I'm just viewing this wrong. Or did this come with maybe working with someone in particular, or just a moment that you sat and thought and sat back and said, actually, do you know what? This is the way that it works for me.
Oh, such a good question. I'm not sure if I know. I'm not sure if I know like definitively what the answer is. But I think that when I came into the fitness industry, like when I joined the fitness industry, I'm laughing. One of the leader kids are bouncing about in the background. I couldn't see which one it was. I'm like that. It's your Auntie Jen here. I think that when I came into the fitness industry, to be in the fitness industry, then I was a plus size woman. So to be in the fitness industry as a plus size person, taking up space in an industry that has chewed me up and spat me out like more times than I could explain, there was no way I was ever fitting in here. Do you know what I mean? So like there was no way I was ever going to be able to like strategically chameleon myself. And I think like my whole life I was always trying to fit in. I was always, because I know a lot of people say this, but I always knew from a very young age that I was distinctly different from other people. I didn't like the same things that other people my age liked. I didn't enjoy a lot of the same things. I didn't want to do the things that my pals were doing. I didn't want to go out drinking and all that. Like, I didn't want to do those things. I wanted to do them so I could fit in, but I just never, it just never appealed to me. Like, I was the only person I knew that studied and study leave. Like, everybody else's study leave would go down the woods and get steaming. I genuinely, I did past paper after past paper after past paper. I just love the, I'm just an ardent follower of rules. But I think that I was so focused on always fitting in, fitting in, fitting in. But I was never going to fit in this industry from the get-go. So I think I had no choice but to show up as who I am and accept who I am and be forthcoming with who I am. And I think when I first joined the industry, I can remember almost trying to like bend and mold myself into what I thought people wanted. And I can remember feeling this huge sense of like imposter syndrome, like, what the fuck am I doing here? There's no way that what I talk about is valuable. Like, there's no way that these people are going to give me the time of day. And actually, I realised that so much of what I knew was the exact things that they were missing. And I think the more I got that feedback to say, like, these are the exact things that have been missing for so many people on their journeys. And when I first came into the industry, I didn't work with, I didn't do coach education. I just worked with coaches' clients around supporting them through like the emotional and kind of psychological side of change and mental performance and stuff like that. And it's one of those things where I've always known it's a valuable skill and I know how much it helped me in my own journey, but I just didn't believe other people would see it as valuable. Do you know what I mean? So I think it was almost like once I started to get that feedback and once I started to recognize I really enjoy this, I find it so like rewarding and it helps me to feel like I actually have a fucking clue what I'm talking about. Because previously in my last job, I worked in the NHS and the NHS as a whole is such a broken system that to influence change is near impossible. It's a completely change of your system. You can influence small pockets of change. But I was working, I was the youngest person in my team. I was the youngest person in working in OD that I knew in Scotland. Like, I didn't, there was nobody else my age doing it. So I always had that huge sense of like, I feel like a child. I feel like a vulnerable wee girl that's got no fucking clue what she's doing because I'm working with all these people who have years and years and years of experience, fucking PhDs up to the eyeballs. Like, there's nothing, I can't compete with them. Like, I'm not in their level. Whereas I feel like when I came into the health and fitness industry, there were so few people doing what I was doing that there didn't need to be a comparison game. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like we're all doing a similar thing, but in our own different ways, and it's working for us all. That was kind of how it felt. And honestly, how it still feels to this day. There are loads of people in the industry who do like similar things to what I do, but I've never felt anything but support and, you know, championing from those people. And I feel the same about them because there's enough to go around for all of us, and we all do it in our own way. So I think that such a long-winded way of asking this question. I love a tangent. I think that I had no choice but to accept me for who I was because I couldn't fit in here anyway. I couldn't pretend to be like them because I'm not a fitness person.
And I'm glad you're not, because that's what makes you so special. And that's why it's so necessary for you to be in this space, because you're literally complete opposite of them. And thank God for gen knowledge. I am very grateful for you, mate. Education and is something that is clearly very, very important to you. And you were saying that when you were younger, music and like learning the kind of the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of music, as something like, is education, what does education mean to you, and what has it brought you through your life?
Education's always been a huge part of my life. Like I said, I loved school. I was always doing some sort of like extracurricular activity. My parents were absolutely sick of me. In fairness, like I would get the bus home for school like most of the time anyway. But if I was at some sort of extracurricular, my mum worked not far from where my school was, so she would always be picking me up at the time that she was finishing work because I was always in school beyond half three. so I've always really valued the process of learning and the value of learning more. And I think that I find it hard to work in an industry where knowledge isn't really seen as a commodity. I find that so strange, having only been previously in circles where knowledge is your main commodity. And I do think that there's a time and place for it. I don't think knowing everything guarantees success, but I think that so many people are operating with huge, huge gaps in their knowledge and skill that they don't recognise that they have. And I always think to myself, like, a lot of the time I've found myself being very guilty of, fuck it, I'll go and do another course, right? And actually, a lot of the time, when you feel that urge to fuck it, go and do another course, it's not always that you're missing a knowledge gap. It's that sometimes you're maybe feeling less competent in a specific area that you think that the course will give you like assurance of. But that being said, it's a huge part of your own career development and progression that you recognise that education's a huge part of that. But education comes in loads of different forms, right? It can come in formal qualifications, it can come in informal short courses, it can come through a book, it can come through a conversation, it can come from a mentor. Like, it comes from so many different areas. But I think that there's less value placed on knowledge in this industry, yet I see so many coaches craving more knowledge. And it's a strange, like, it's a strange juxtaposition of seeing people who are craving to know more, to be more, to do better, but in an industry where that's not something that's really prioritized. Building a big business seems to be the biggest priority for a lot of coaches externally, but then when I have conversations with them, 9 times out of 10, they just want to be better. I just want to be a better coach. I just want to get better results for my clients. I want to enjoy my business more. Like I said to somebody the other day, it's not normal to feel dread at check-in day. It's not normal to feel dread opening WhatsApp and seeing what's happened to your clients or seeing somebody's name pop up on your phone and thinking, fuck, what is it now? Like, that's not a normal part of the coaching process. That's a sign to me that A, you either have gaps in your skill and knowledge that are struggling you to be able to hold space for appropriate coaching to happen, or B, you have poor boundaries with your own emotions, your clients' emotions, and your working practice, or C, both. So I think that sometimes people don't place enough value in knowledge. That being said, that could it be my bias that I hold it in such high regard? But all the things that I know, I can show you where I learned them. You know what I mean? So, like, you do learn so much from your experience. The vast majority of our learning, I think it's like 70% of our learning comes from on the job. So much of what you learn will be through experience. But if you're not getting new experiences, you're not learning new things. Right. So at the point in time at which you're not getting any new experiences, that means you're not extracting any new learning from that. And you have to think, how do I create more experiences to learn more things? But I can pinpoint you to the things that I've done over the years where I've gathered this knowledge. So I place huge value on it. Because I know that it's brought me to where I am, and I know that it's a huge driver behind why I feel confident and competent in what I do. Because I do have the accolade to say I'm qualified and experienced in this. And I think that really goes a long way as well, to be able to hold something and say I'm qualified to be able to do this. Again, something that's not really valued in this industry, but something that I think for me has gone such a long way in feeling competent in my skill, to be able to say, like, I've not just done like a 6 hour online life coaching course like Jez Peepshow. Like, I've actually gone through formal education to be here, so I can confidently say I know what I'm doing, and I can confidently say that I can keep you safe whilst getting your result.
What I'll give you, actually give me a bit, made me think out loud, is that why I get on so well with you is that you are actually a fantastic teacher. I am someone who's kind of grown up in their life who's actually struggled with education, as in it was difficult for me to actually process what I was trying to learn. I wanted to be there, but it just didn't click. And what has you've done for me. One, you've met my needs, but two, you've been able to actually teach me stuff that has actually made me feel more comfortable. And the biggest struggle that I have had in terms of my own growth is probably finding good teachers. That was probably, this is purely obviously my lens, but meeting you, you're probably one of the first people, handful of people, they're going to come on this podcast, handful of people that have actually helped me teach stuff and feel confident with the thing that I'm passionate about, because I always saw it as a me problem, as in everyone else is educating themselves, they're going off to university or whatever they're doing, and I was like, I don't fit here, like why are these people doing this? This doesn't make sense. And having conversations and being in all of your educational stuff has really helped me actually make something which is extremely difficult and extremely hard to digest for you to go, actually, if you look at it like this, it allows you to see that it really joins the dots. So this is obviously a roundabout way of me saying thank you to you, but from someone who has struggled, who is was basically desperate to learn, he just needed a good teacher. So thank you for being my teacher. You're brilliant.
Thank you, mate. Never considered myself a teacher.
You've got a natural flow and a natural, obviously, because you're a fantastic coach, but your ability to actually read someone or me in this situation and actually break it down in a way that I understand is absolutely fantastic. So, thank you.
Yeah. Do you know, but I think it's so important because I think, like, what's the point? What's the point in teaching information that people can't understand? Like, if I'm going to teach it, it's my responsibility to make sure that you understand it. Do you know what I mean? So then I hold the responsibility for saying, how can I say this differently? How can I adjust this? How can I make this more applicable? How can we apply context to this? Because I think learning as a whole for so many people has been so inaccessible for so much of their lives that they have a really strong negative bias towards learning new things because the fear is, what am I in for? Is it going to feel like school? Am I going to get punished? This is something that we are seeing a lot in Built to Coach as well, and just reassuring people who, and we have a total mix of learning abilities, like from people who've never done anything at all to people who've got university degrees. It totally varies, but you would never know with the people in the room, and that's the thing that I love about it, because it's my responsibility to make sure that this learning is accessible to you. And I think people do have that bias because so much of learning and education has not been accessible to people for so long. And I think about, like, my husband Paul's got ADHD, but he's the smartest person that I know, and I'm not just saying that to blow smoke up his arse. Like, I can only say that because I know he'll never listen to this. I would never say that to his face. just wouldn't give him the satisfaction. But he doesn't have the, like, professional or, like, qualifications or accolades to show he's got a great job that he loves. But, like, that's all gone on his, like, personal experience and knowledge of the stuff that he's taught himself, because the traditional access routes to learning were not set up for someone with the way that his brain works to learn well. And I think it's good now that in our current society that learning accessibility is something that's really prioritized. It's something that I really prioritize. I used to work in equality and diversity, so a huge part of my job was making learning accessible for people. And you know something, it's so easy to do from the education side. Like, from the teaching side, it's so easy to do, but so many people just can't really be arsed doing it, which is such a shame, because I think it's the teacher's responsibility, it's the educator's responsibility for people who the people that they're teaching to be able to understand it 100%.
And because this is purely me, the education has just been something that's been horrible for me, right? Like I distinctly remember going to a college to apply to say, like, look, I'm lost. What should I do? And the bloke literally like laughed me off the table. And I just remember walking into the car park. I was with my dad, and he was trying to be nice to me. And I remember just thinking, what the hell do I do now? And I think that's why I am personally so grateful for the fitness industry, because it's allowed me with the skills that I have to go and actually help people, but then also have access to incredible people like yourself and other people that I want to talk to. And I think it's so important that, as you said, is that it is accessible and people can get access and learn in the way that they can, because I think it's just amazing. And you and the way that I've been taught things has just ultimately changed my life. Mate, this podcast is about did you earn it or did you learn it, and celebrating the hiccups that you have faced. Is there something in your life that you view as a little bit of a hiccup that you are willing to tell us a little story about?
The hell? There are several.
Yeah, don't worry. It's good. I've got the ultimate subscription on Zoom, so we can go all day. No.
Not hit the 40-minute cutoff. Oh my God. I think it's so funny because I think that I definitely have made so many mistakes. I can't find like specific moments where I'm like, oh yeah, like that, I regret that. There probably are things that I regret doing. There are things that I regret not doing. The things that I regret not doing are living my life more, like when I was younger. Like that's probably my biggest hiccup. I think I have more hiccups in the things that I've not done rather than the things that I've done. So when I was younger and I was in an abusive relationship, so obviously that influenced a lot of the things that I was able to do and that I was allowed to do. So it's daft things now, I suppose, but they hold meaning to me because they show me the things that I didn't get. Like my pals would all go to the spam music festival in Scotland called Tea in the Park. And my pals would all go to Tea in the Park for the weekend camp. And like Paul tells me stories of when he used to go to Tea in the Park with his pals. I wasn't allowed to go. So like, I never got to do that. Or like girls' holidays. I got one girls' holiday at Ibiza when I was 20, but things and my abusive relationship really went downhill quite severely after that as a result of me being on a girls' holiday. So that was that out. And just like fun experiences, like when I went to uni, like I worked three jobs when I was at uni. I come from a working class background, so I wasn't in the position where my parents could put me into halls. Like I lived at home. I got into KCL actually, which is really interesting, and I really wanted to go, but they couldn't afford to send me. They couldn't afford to put me in halls because it's fucking extortionate. So again, another opportunity that I would have loved to have taken but didn't get to. And when I went to uni, so I worked in the Chinese on a Friday night, sometimes a Sunday night. I worked in Morrison's in the cake shop. Part-time, that job was fucking torture, but so much fun. It was all students, like all of us that worked there, we used to get in like hungover, still drunk, all that, for our shifts on a Sunday. It was great fun. And then I used to tutor piano as well. So I had three jobs to hold down while studying full time, whilst being in an abusive relationship and trying to manage the dynamic of that and his family and all of the challenges that came as like having relationships with them, as well as trying to maintain like friends and stuff like that. So I never really got to do the whole student lifestyle thing. I never really got to do the whole like get out. I did go out drinking, don't get me wrong, I was steaming a fair few times, like I'm Scottish. I grew up in Glasgow, I was really avoiding that. And I did have great moments. I'm so grateful for the great moments, but I was just so aware of how much I was missing out on, because if I wasn't at uni, I was working. And I had to grow up really quickly just basically to survive. So I kind of went from my pals call me a child bride because I kind of had to go from like being a kid to being an adult overnight. So that means that I kind of missed out on quite a lot of things, but I've also spent a lot of my 20s and now my 30s reclaiming a lot of those things and doing fun stuff and like creating new memories that replace the old ones. Paul, my husband, has been kind of instrumental in helping me to do that. So that there's, even though there's been regrets around things I've not done, there's positives that come out of the other side of it, but they still live as regrets. And like even just in my 20s, like work was my whole life, and I wish I'd taken more time to have fun. Like I wish I'd taken more. I've always made the smart decision, and I've always made the logistical decision and the safe decision and the thing that makes sense. And that's just who I am as a person. Like even if I'm back, I'd probably do the same things again, but I wish I'd taken more risks and had more fun and not really care, not sweated the small stuff, you know. Those are probably my things, is that I don't feel regret over what I have done, and I don't feel like I've had any major hiccups. I feel like I've always done the best that I could with what I had at the time, but what I had at different times I could have changed. But I didn't always feel able to. I wish I'd have stood up for myself more, and I wish I'd have backed myself more, and I wish I'd have asked for help more. That's probably my biggest issue. Like, I was no surprise that I battled mental illness for the vast majority of my life, and I've had a suicide attempt, and I spent lots and lots of years, fucking trigger warning, sorry, I should have said that. I spent lots and lots of years really struggling, really, really struggling severely, to the point where it just became a part of me. And I wish I'd asked for more help. Do you know what I mean? I wish I'd asked for more help, and I wish I'd accepted the help that was being offered to me as well. So I think I don't have any like standout specific moments that I think about, but I wish I'd just said fuck it a lot more. Do you know what I mean? I now live by the motto of fuck about and find out, and I wish I'd spent a lot more time fucking about and finding out. My wee sister is 5 years younger than me. She's 26, and she's a PT, and she was in two places for her to start growing her business online and going for the whole like hybrid model, or whether to go, she's also a dancer, so or whether to go to Malta and work as like a dancer fitness instructor for the summer with her pal. And I was like, how do I help her to make this decision without my bias? Let's just go to fucking Malta, like go and live your life and go and have fun. And I feel like I now, my almost like my reparation for all of this now is just to encourage her to go and like live her life and take the risk and make the decision. Because like, you know yourself, when you go older, it's all those things that you look back on. Like, it's all those things, those are your memories that, like, when me and my pals meet up now, it's like fucking all were yesterdays. Like, we just tell all the old stories about shit that we used to do because we don't do anything fucking fun anymore. So I think that's probably my only, or my biggest regret, my biggest hiccup, is not just saying fuck it more and having more fun.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate you sharing that. That is big courage. Someone is trapped within their business and they're not having fun. Is there something tactical or tangible you would say to them apart from grow up and get a life? Is there something that you would say to them to allow them to start stepping away from it? Because I touched upon this last week with Jean in terms of people's relationships with almost like work and rest, but is there something you could say to guide someone towards that? Do you know what? You only live once.
You're not a failure if you just don't want to do it anymore. I don't know what it is about establishing a business that almost welds people to the identity of it. Like, I see this in across the industry all the time, where being a business owner becomes the sole component of somebody's identity. And I think a huge reason why people who are maybe no longer right for running a business, or people who are no longer running a business that they want to be running, hold on to it, it's because they don't know who they are without it. And they didn't spend time developing those other like core pillars of their identity and who they are and what they value and what makes them tick. They just threw everything into being a business owner, that the only reason that they can't let go of it is because they don't know who they are without it. And for those people, I would encourage them first to go and explore who they are without it. Like, if I took it off you today, what would you do tomorrow? And that it's not like the pinnacle of success either. Like, I think there's way too much. Like, MD can pay fucking 15 quid to go and register a limited company at a company's house, and then they're technically a business owner. Do you know what I mean? So like, there's not this weighted merit in it. It's not for everybody, and that's okay. Because you know what? See, when you first started being a PTing people just because you fucking love to PT people, you probably didn't sign up for running a business. Like, a lot of people, I think, have been forced down this route because they were told by business mentors, this is what you need to do next. Or they were forced out of the gym and online, like with COVID, and then feel like they can't go back, feel like training people again is a step backwards. But actually, if you just fucking love training people, like, do what you fucking go back to doing what you love. Like, there's no failure in it. There's no, like, take with it all the lessons and experience that you have now, but go back to doing the thing that you actually enjoy. Like, go back to that person and that version of you who decided to embark on this journey and figure out what did they actually want. And this is a conversation I have with myself constantly, because nobody's immune to the standards and the metrics of success that are held up in the fitness industry. I find myself thinking that I'm failing because I'm not doing fucking 50 grand a month. Do you know what I mean? Like, that being held as a fucking normal standard. If you're doing less than 10 grand a month, you're an abject failure. Like, and just remembering that I used to be someone who didn't earn 10 grand a year. So actually, for all intents and purposes, I'm doing no bad. And I think support yourself to identify what your own metrics of success are and stick to those. Like, break free of the bullshit of what this industry has told you success is, because when you lie your head in the pillow at night, you're the only person that determines what success is. Like, when you look at your children, when you look at your partner, when you look at your home, your life, your family, your friends, none of them give a shit about how much money is in your bank account. Not one of them. Like, none of them give a shit about what you look like. Like, they give a shit about who you are. And I think that when you hold and measure yourself against the kind of person that you are, the kind of impact that you have, the influence and the difference that you make to other people's lives, hold that as your metric of success and say, what's going to make me better at those things? And accept that maybe running a business isn't going to help you achieve those things, and that isn't going to meet your needs. And if you decide it's not for you, that's okay. It's not failure. But if you decide that it is for you, then take the time to consider how you define what a successful business owner looks like, not what this industry has told you and sold you the belief of what being a successful business owner is.
She's here all week,
I would
mate.
drop this mic, but it was 100 quid, so
So would I. I have to sort of
fuck
put
that.
upside to make sure it wouldn't fall
I got it in the Amazon Prime sale down to
off.
100 days, so there ain't no way I'm dropping it.
Mate, it's so powerful and so important, and something that I definitely know someone listening today will definitely need to hear that and take that away, because it's so valuable that we're able to do that. Is there anything in your mind that you haven't said? This isn't a trap.
Oh, many
That you
thanks.
haven't said that you think someone might need to hear today.
Know why you're here. Know which corner of it is yours. I'm here to disrupt. So every single day that I show up with clients or with students or on social media, my intention is always to disrupt. My intention is always to disrupt what you know, disrupt what you think, and disrupt what the industry has always told you you should think, you should believe, you should be doing. I want to disrupt all of that so that you're forced to think for yourself. So always think about why you're here. What's your intention? What bit of this are you trying to hack off for yourself? That's the bit that I'm hacking off. So you can steal that if you can't think of one. But just always ask yourself, what am I here for? What is my intention here? What am I here to do? That'll guide you.
Jen, thank you. You are such a gorgeous human being, a gorgeous soul. If somebody has listened to this and they don't know who you are, I don't know who, do you exist? I don't know. Where can they find you? Where can they get more?
You can get me on Instagram. I am coach.with.jen. Or you can get me on my other page for coach education, which is at Built to Coach. But that is shared by myself and Mark. So if you want to hear just from me, coach.with.jen.
I would personally advise both. It is absolutely fantastic what they do and what they're speaking about. So obviously, if you've got any questions, please jump in. But off the back of this web episode, sorry, please, if you've got anything to say, I'd love it if you could give her your biggest takeaway, because she's absolutely fantastic. But mate, thank you for being here. I appreciate you, and I will speak to you soon.
Appreciate
Bye.
it. Thank you.